Welcome to the Probate Mastermind podcast. In this episode, you will learn best practice tips for setting a prospecting schedule, leaving voicemails, answering callbacks, and prospecting attorneys for B2B relationships. The coaches from All the Leads help put transactions together with live deal analysis and discuss strategies for relocating occupants, presenting Subject to as an alternative to a short sale, and presenting price options on appointments. Other topics include how to structure your real estate business for an agent-investor partnership, how to use Google My Business for lead generation, and how to find a property owner when driving for dollars if skip tracing doesn't work. These episodes are recorded as a live question and answer mastermind with participation from agents and investors all across the country and can be found at alltheleads.com/blog or in the All the Leads Mastermind Facebook group. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget to subscribe to future episodes.
Welcome, remarkable agents and investors nationwide. Today is Thursday, September 24th, 2020. And this is Mastermind Podcast number 297. Coming up on 300 times we've done this, guys, and we couldn't do it without you.
Still got two questions.
Perfect, yeah. Jim. Go ahead.
Okay. I think you know the answer to both of them. Probate Plus questions. Just got some new leads in Mobile County, and one of the properties has three properties, but they are all in Colorado. And now the attorney is in Mobile, but there's not a primary residence or a secondary home in Mobile County. Just wondering what the reason for that might be. I'm sure I know. But
it could be investment property. So they may have sold their primary residence and they were living in a nursing home or renting or living with a family member, but they held their portfolio in Colorado. So you've got an ancillary probate happening in Colorado where their real assets were.
Well, add a little bit to this. The Colorado primary residence is $2.5 million. So be a hell of a referral.
What part of Colorado? What market?
Denver.
Okay. And is it commercial or residential?
Residential. Yeah, okay. It's 9,018 square feet, home built in 62. 10 bedrooms. Oh, get this. One bathroom.
I'm betting.
That doesn't sound right.
That doesn't sound just kosher. But okay. That's kind of what I figured, something like that. We'll still be making calls to it. The second one is...
And Jim, once you talk to them, remember, we've got a few subscribers in the Denver metro market. Depending on which county it is, I'll introduce you to. Just let me know whenever you make contact with them. We'll get them set up with the right agent for that property type.
Absolutely.
Obviously, that referral fee could pay for your marketing to leads for years.
I was already put a pin to that one.
Oh, yeah. Good job, buddy. That's great.
Yeah. The second question, this is the second time it's come up in the last couple of weeks. I have a property with a same address, same city, state, everything. But one of the addresses is north and one of the addresses is south. And I've not made the call to either one as of yet. Could that be an accident or is it something across the street from each other?
I would guess that one of them is a false positive.
That's what I figured. Okay.
The only way to really know which one is to give them a call.
Yeah, okay. Very good, guys. Y'all have a wonderful week.
You too. Thanks, Jim.
All right, Jim. Good job, buddy, and stay healthy, man, under the circumstances. Good for you, man. All right, next up is phone number ending in 0427. You're up next.
Hi there. This is Janie Howard. I'm in Colorado Springs. I am brand new. And Chad, I need your guidance. I got a call from my attorney about an hour ago. He knows I'm pursuing probate business, and he offered me a divorce lead. He said that his client is in Virginia, and the good news, the court ordered that the property here in Colorado Springs be sold. But the bad news is his wife is still in the house. She's an alcoholic in pretty bad shape and lives with her boyfriend, and I understand that she's not leaving. Apparently, there's an agent involved, but nothing's been signed. The agent gave, it sounds like, an 80% offer to the client who's in Virginia, and he's not very pleased with that. My attorney asked me if I was up for this, and of course I said, I am. This is what I've been trained for. He's asked the husband to connect with me, and I have his number as well now. So I need your coaching on what my first call should look like.
Well, you're thinking you're going to refer this, correct?
No, I'm in Colorado Springs, and the property is in Colorado Springs.
I misunderstood. I thought the property was in Virginia. Okay, I understand.
Sorry.
Okay, so what do you need help with? Like how you get her out of the home?
Yeah, how I approach him and suggestions on how I would get her out of the home. Absolutely.
Sure. You've probably heard me talk about it before. There's the carrot and there's the stick, and we always try the carrot first. So my first question is anyone willing to pay her moving expenses and help her find suitable housing in the family?
Okay, so that would be one of my questions for him.
If he's willing to advance her the money, then you can contact a property manager, find her a suitable place to live. He can pay for it. Find a moving company. He can pay for that. If he's unable or unwilling to do that, then the next step would be, can you do it through social services? Can you contact the housing authority? Can you contact a social worker? And can you find suitable housing before you make contact with her? So if she's in that situation, she's probably not in the most stable mindset. So showing up saying, you know, we're gonna find a place for you to live is going to scare the hell out of her. And she's probably behaving erratically anyway. So it could blow up really quickly. I would rather you approach her and say, you know, listen, I spoke to your brother. It's very important to him and also to me that we know that we improve your situation. So we've actually made contact with the property manager. We found this house on this street and we've got a HUD voucher to pay for it. And all you would have to do is, you know, make sure you can get your stuff moved by this date. So it's going to land way more softly on her because her brain doesn't have to go into that, oh my God, I'm going to be homeless, because you're presenting it to her as a solution, not a possibility. This is where, you know, this is why you have social workers on your team. You don't monetize that partner, but they can do some really difficult, really valuable work that we're just not going to be able to do. So I've helped people in these situations. Like sometimes alcoholics can even go into long-term care facilities or rehab facilities as part of a social program. And then when they come out, they'll have a HUD voucher and more suitable housing than they had to begin with.
Okay.
That would find out if there's a willingness for the family to help and pay for those things. And even they could even take that back in the final accounting for the court. It's not that they have to pay for it. They just need to advance the money. The other alternative, is she an heir, the occupant?
Well, it's the wife of the husband who's the client of my attorney. So it's his wife who's the alcoholic living there with her boyfriend.
All right. This is a 2020 deal if I've ever heard one.
All right.
Yeah, so I'd say step one, see if there's the wherewithal and the willingness to get her into a more suitable situation to get the house vacant. And if not, then I would go the social services route. There's also the possibility that you could connect her with Probate Cash, one of our kind of preferred partners. They do estate advance lending. So if she's due something from the inheritance, let's say she's due 100 grand, they'll loan her as much as 25 grand.
This is not a probate, is it? This is just strictly
a
divorce.
No.
Okay. You can also advance people money in the event of a divorce. You could leverage hard money lenders, real estate investors, and pawn shop owners or deal makers. If you can say, you know, listen, here are the assets she'll be due in the divorce. Can you advance her this cash? Then that, I would say that's your solution C. A and B first.
Okay. And a real basic question. I just contact the county here for a social worker.
Yeah, you can usually just Google social services, Colorado Springs, and the number will pop up. I got really lucky, and the first person I talked to is amazing. Like, she's helped me with several deals. You may have to bounce through two or three different people, but they tend to be, you know, people who gravitate toward that career are very compassionate and very helpful usually. So it's pretty easy to connect with the right one.
Well, awesome, Chad. This is really helpful. I didn't expect to have such a challenge before my letters have even gone out.
That's a terrible problem to have. All right. Thank you so much. Next up is phone number ending in 0456. You're up next.
This is Josh Shanley. I'm in Central PA, Harrisburg, Mechanicsburg area. I am trying to figure out how to help a seller that I met with earlier this week. She super motivated and ready to go. It's a reverse mortgage. The balance is like 137, 135, somewhere in that neighborhood. The problem is to flip it, the amount of renovations it would need, there would be no equity in the deal. To rent it, it certainly wouldn't need quite as much. Just I'm racking my brain for if or how I could potentially help this person. She's already moved on in her mind. She's got a place in Florida. She's been battling illnesses. She just wants to be done with it.
If I may, let me ask you a couple questions before we all answer. Is the condition it's in, would it appraise for more or less than what's owed?
Less.
Okay, then that's a reverse mortgage short sale. That's not, we've seen a number of those. What I would strongly suggest, and you said the executor is cooperative, right? She doesn't want anything out of it, but she probably.
It's not a probate. It's not a probate.
Oh, it's not?
Privately,
okay.
Yeah, it's just a motivated seller, but I knew you guys would bring some great perspective.
That's a classic short sale, and one of the reasons I jumped in before probate, my wife and I started a short sale company about 15 years ago. She's still doing it. She's done over 2,000 of them, so I'd reach out to Pam. It's probably a coin flip whether you're going to be able to get it enough under appraisal to make it worth it for you or not. Are you a realtor also or not?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, good. Well, either way then, you know, even if you sell it, you have to sell it for market value as a realtor. You know, if Pam can negotiate enough of a low price that it's worth it as an investor, then you jump in. If she can't, then at least you get your real estate commission, you know, one way or the other. But she'll handle the whole thing for you start to finish. Do you have her contact info?
I don't. Yeah.
Give her a call. It's Pam Sullivan, and the number is 954-584-0000. And I'll give her, just in case you miss each other, I'll give her your number also.
Perfect.
Josh, if you want the house, there is an equity play. You're familiar with how reverse mortgages work and how the foreclosure process works?
Yeah. Well, okay. I guess somewhat.
So you know the payoff. Do you know when the house, what was the date the house was vacated?
Well, it's not vacant yet.
Oh, perfect. So you have a 6-month window to take this as a sub-2, do your rental rehab, stabilize it, and refinance it with a community bank. Boom. You get a free house.
But Chad,
you have to refinance it within the 6-month window. After CapEx, he's going to have a higher appraisal. It'll appraise at 150, 160 probably. Through a community bank, you'll be able to get 80 to 85 LTV on the commercial side. So by the time you do your CapEx and put a tenant in there, you'll be able to get your cash out refi and probably come out of it with a little bit of cash. But you'll definitely have a free house and a tenant.
Would you present both options, or would you, how would you personally approach it? Would you try that as option one? And if
I always try to let the consumer's outcome decide the strategy, and it costs me money sometimes, but I have no trouble sleeping. In this, you can both win, because in my opinion, the best strategy for her is to get out of this more quickly. So the sub-2 closing is going to happen in, I don't know, 5 to 7 business days. And a short sale closing is going to take 3 to 6 months. She can get the house closed faster and move on with her life. You can get a free house. Everybody wins.
It has been so long since I did a sub-2. Where would be a good place to start to figure that out in PA? It has been 12.
He, Chris Prefontaine, wrote a book called Real Estate on Your Terms. It's about a 4.5-hour audio book. And he also sells a creative financing course if you need more than that. But if you find a good, savvy real estate attorney who's working with investors, they'll help walk you through the purchase agreement before you go on the appointment. Just say, you know, let's pre-write our sub-2 clause and make sure it's correct. But you just need to be well aware you should close the house into a land trust as well. I think in PA, you still have to pay transfer stamps up there. But if you close it into a land trust, the lender sees it. They're going to see it as an estate planning move. Even if they do call it due on sale, you still have whatever your foreclosure process will afford you, probably 3 months to get your rehab and refi done.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I would say, too, it depends on how much you're going to put into it, because, you know, the risk reward. If you're going to put the money into it, just make sure that you're going to be able to get it back out. That's what I would look at. Excellent. Did that help?
That was fantastic. Appreciate it.
One last thing. Sure. When you talk to Bob, we need to get back on the phone and pick up where we left off.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. Next up is phone number ending in 2075. You're up next.
Yes. Thank you. Last week, I think it was Chad had said that when he went out to meet with a prospect and went out as a real estate agent, he would give them the price of full market value, wholesale, and there was a third option. And what was that third option?
As is. And my personal definition of as is, what price can I guarantee I'll have a ratified contract in 7 days and a closing in 30 days?
So as is, full market value, and then is there a third option?
Cash or wholesale.
Okay.
And then the fourth option could be, you know, renovated retail. So if you're going to do a complete renovation and sell it for top dollar.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Good questions today, and they're short, and we're getting through a lot of people. I love it. Next up is phone number ending in 7652. You're up next.
Hey, my name's Tanya, and I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm new to this probate real estate way to get leads. I'm interested in the mastery class, and so the certification that you get through that class is, what is it, certified probate expert? But then I was looking online. There are other certifications that I see other realtors using, CPRES. So I don't know, like, what the difference is. And if you use that CPE on documents and marketing materials, does that hold as much weight as the other certification?
So,
does that make sense?
It's accredited through us, not through NAR or the state or anyone else. So pretty much any designation you get is accredited through whoever is offering that coursework. With Probate Mastery, I designed it largely around psychology, people and situation. It's not so much focused on law and logistics, because you don't really need to know all that. We give you a basic understanding of the probate timeline and process. Other courses tend to focus more like they're educating attorneys. They teach you all about every little intricate detail of probate, but they teach you less about how to deal with the people and the situation. So Probate Mastery, it's built to help you learn how to attract business, get engagement, hold engagement, build rapport, and doing the right things in the right order. Other courses are more laid out to help you understand everything about probate, but it's not as how-to. So I would say that Probate Mastery, it's designed to beat the learning curve down to a matter of days or weeks versus, you know, learning about probate, everything about probate, and then having to go learn the people side of it yourself. So we're very focused on the human side of the probate niche.
I feel like I need both aspects. So does the Probate Mastery offer some technical training too? Because I don't want to sound like a fool going into it.
Yeah, in session one, I'll take you through the overall numbers. So why this is a big opportunity over the next 45 to 50 years. We'll actually look at the sheer numbers of people that have gone through probate and will go through, why that's an opportunity, why it creates so much urgency, how the lack of estate planning. And so you'll understand, if you look at the logos for Mastery, that weird symbol is the international symbol for empathy. So I'll take the logical side of it and then show you the human side of it. And that the result is an empathetic understanding of why these people need our help and why it's such an urgent situation. From there, we go into the moment somebody passes away until probate's filed, till the confirmation hearing, till they get the documents, when they have the authority. I'll walk you through the entire timeline and process and explain to you. I don't need you to be a probate attorney when you come out of the course. I need you to speak confidently about the process and make those people feel comfortable with you and your level of professionalism. And you'll absolutely get that. So that's session one. Session two is more on what is your specific strategy. You hear us talk about the call we just talked, you know, Josh. That's more of an advanced tactic. We teach those things, like even to the level where you partner with the estate and you guys split the equity that you build into the property. So we'll go from basic, here's how you take a listing, to here's how you do more advanced things to really maximize equity for your business and for the estate. And then session three is all about people. So we're focused on how to get the engagement in the beginning of a phone call, how to build rapport, get all the information that you need to offer these options and keep them engaged without wearing them out, and then also how to handle the appointments. So it ends up being about, you know, 2 to 3 hours of instruction and then 3 to 4 hours of open Q&A. So the course is running anywhere from typically 12 to 16 hours over 3 consecutive days. With other people, you're going to pay twice as much and you'll get about 5 hours of content. So I'm as thorough as I can be. I literally teach you everything I've ever learned about it.
Okay. And then let me ask you one more thing. Thank you for that. So in terms of like timing and signing up for the leads and sending the initial letters and doing the initial phone calls, do you recommend, like, for someone in my position that doesn't have a lot of experience with this, to wait until you take that so that you can position yourself, so that you can be in the best possible position to win and convert the leads? Because I want to get started, but on the other hand, I don't want to not do right by the people that I'm going to be calling, you know, because
sure.
that's going to make me
look
bad. You
can kind of get the best of both worlds. So because the class is only taught live and only once a month, if you sign up today, you'll get the recordings from the previous class. So you'll have access to the full course that you can listen to the Q&A from last month. And then we'll register you for the live class. And you can come back as many times as you'd like. Joyce Morris holds the record at 39 months running. She's been back 39 classes in a row. So you can come back as often as you would like to get a refresher. You can watch the recording starting right now, today, and be through that by Monday. You could be, you know, where you needed to be. And then you'll have the live class coming up on October 6th.
Okay, so that makes me feel better. So I can go through the archives, learn the basic information. Well, learn basically all the information is what you're saying, because I'll have access to all three classes. And then that way, when I start talking to people, I'm sounding more educated.
Yeah. And it's recorded, I mean, for this reason, but also you'll probably have to run through the course a time or two, because it's drinking from a fire hose for sure. I mean, I move very quickly because it's recorded and you can always come back to it. So you'll have the recordings to refer back to, as, you know, your training wheels. But you could be started as soon as Monday for sure.
And Tanya, I just wanted to add to that. All three of us are real estate coaches. And I think one of the most common mistakes I think we see people make is they want to know everything before they do anything. And I would say intricate and as detailed as probate mastery is, most of it, you're never, you know, on your average transaction, it's usually relatively pretty simple. You're reaching out to a motivated absentee owner that needs help. It's not, you know, you don't have to be a probate attorney to get started. The probate mastery course will pretty much prepare you for any situation that could ever come up. But, you know, don't, by the time, if you listen to the course, if you just go through the fast track training that we provide, you're pretty much set to start contacting the sellers. And if you do that and mastery and then order the leads, you know, it usually takes a couple of weeks to get your leads. You'll be more than good to go by the time the leads come. You know, don't be afraid you're not going to know the answer to a question. You can always tell people, hey, you know, I've got a great coach. I'm part of a group of, you know, 11,000 people that specialize in this. Let me find out and I'll get back to you. Just a point I thought worth mentioning, okay?
Well, maybe you picked up a little of the anxiety that was in my question.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yes, I did. Exactly.
I want to do a good job. These people are already going through enough. I don't want to waste their time. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I just want to be in the best position to answer. And even if they don't end up using me, you know, at least it was a valuable conversation. Like, that's where I'm coming at it from. Okay.
Yep.
So I'm going to start listening to the record. I'm going to sign up and start listening to the recording. So thank you.
Awesome. And, I have a feeling one of go ahead, Bruce.
If I may, I've been doing this, and Tanya, this is Bruce, I'm in the same state as you, I'm up in Raleigh. The very first probate deal that I did, I didn't know anything, and I called the attorney, I just took a regular old listing, and it was probate, and I called the attorney every week, and I'd say, hey, how's everything going on your end? She'd say, good, I do need this form, though, and she'd send it to me, and I'd get the client to sign. And I'd ask her every week through the process what was going on. I didn't know anything. I was learning the whole time, the whole way through. And at the end of the deal, the attorney gave me a review that said that I was the most knowledgeable probate real estate agent she'd ever dealt with, and that she would have no problem referring future estate client to me. The thing was, is I didn't know anything. I called and I asked good questions. I knew nothing. Chad's class, Probate Mastery, didn't even exist at the time. And what a lot of times I see our subscribers struggle with is they do want to know everything. And in reality, you don't have to know it all. And you really don't have to know a whole lot. When somebody asks you a question, well, how soon can I sell the house? The answer is, well, how soon do you want to sell the house? That's the answer. You don't have to give them the legal answer. You find out what their motivations are, and okay, well, why don't you connect me with your attorney, and I'll ask the attorney if that's something that can fit in the timeline. You didn't give a probate expert answer there, and the overwhelming majority of the questions and conversations you're going to have will not put you on the spot with something that you don't know.
Okay, that's good to know.
And as you're doing this, and as you become a subscriber, definitely use, on top of the mastery class, use an implementation coaching call with me. It's on the website in the subscriber portal. You just log in and you go to training and schedule a free coaching call. And I'll walk you through a few of these basic things that will get you started as well if you're still working through or waiting on mastery.
I appreciate that so much. That makes me feel a lot better. Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Well, now all of a sudden we only have three left in the queue. We're just tearing through the queue today. So if anybody else wants to jump in, hit star six and hit one. In the meantime, next up is phone number ending in 3040. You're up next.
Hi, good afternoon. Kathy here in Houston. I'm calling because what I find on some older leads that I'm able to find out what's going on with the probate case. And I see some of these cases have a drop order. And I'm not really sure that means that the probate is ended. However, I do see that there still is property for sale or outstanding in the estate and is still in the decedent's name. So I'm just wondering, how do I handle those things?
I think this is a Texas. This came up a couple of calls ago. My best guess at it is you have a specific scenario in your state called monument of title. And
Yeah. If
the house is the most valuable asset, they may file probate in the beginning and then they learn later about monument of title. So then they petition for monument of title. The house is then cut out of the probate, which drops the overall estate value. So the estate then meets the small estate exemption. So they close probate. It becomes a simple estate settlement. So the house is still in the name of the deceased, but it's been released from the probate. And this is a Texas-specific provision. It's your state is the only place I've ever seen this. It pretty much has to be that. The thing to remember, even if it's a property held in trust that shows up in Probate Plus or however you found out about it, but the human factors are typically the same, regardless of your level of wealth. You know, we all have the same challenges with losing a family member. How do we get the house empty, cleaned out, sold? What's it worth? You know, all the social motivating factors are the same. It's just a more efficient process.
Okay. All right. Well, then I guess I'll just keep sending them letters then, if that's the case. Thank you very much. All right.
Bye. All right. Thank you. Next up is phone number ending in 0693. You're up next.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Dave and Shelley Coates. I actually have a couple questions for you guys.
Sure.
One, we have a lender who uses the ringless voicemail, and we're curious about using it, but I don't want to violate any laws and get sued.
Don't violate any laws and get sued. Literally daily, it's becoming more likely that you will get pinched and using that. We certainly have a lot of people that have had a lot of success, but they're clearly violating the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. So you just have to look at it and assess your own risk and decide if it's worth that. It certainly works, but there is a certain amount of liability with it, especially when attorneys are, you know, their business is down just like everybody else's. So they're looking to shake people down for quick settlements. So just know that there's attorneys in some markets running radio commercials, and if they can get one person to forward that to them, then they can drag it into a class, subpoena your records, and shake you down for quite a bit of money.
Okay, but even if you're like following the guidelines of not calling DNC, and these are just like...
If you read TCPA, what it says is you have to have express written consent. So they have to be opted in and they have to have agreed to that. If you mail them a letter first and you get them to text a number that says, please text for more information, text, you know, 72845, and that has a terms and conditions, and they accept the terms and conditions, then you can send them ringless voicemail for 90 days.
Wow, I really handcuff you to that, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then my second question is, it seems like there's more secondary people or people that are associated with the personal representative on the list than personal representatives. Is there a good generic voicemail for those that are associated with the personal representative?
Meaning when the phone number name does not match the PR name?
Correct.
Yeah. Just, you know, hey, this is Chad. I'm trying to reach John Doe. Could you please pass the message along and have him call me at 540-999-9999?
Okay.
And you don't have to sell anything. You don't have to disclose everything, the reason you're calling. The only reason to leave a voicemail is to get a call back. So be vague. Just understand, you know, when you get the inbound call on that, you may have to disarm them because they might be like, you know, you left this obscure message. Who the hell are you? What do you want? Just be prepared to stand up to that and just know that people might be on guard because you were vague in your request for them to call you.
Okay.
So
that helps. Thank
Chad,
you.
I don't run into a lot of people that have voicemail set up anymore these days. And if they don't have a voicemail set up, And, you know, you're going to hear me and Chad maybe disagree with each other here, but I would just call and pretend that you're leaving that message and really think that it's the PR's phone number.
Yeah, a lot of times it'll just be, thank you for calling, and the phone number. I see that also. Thank you for calling 875-628, but that's more common than it used to be.
If we're working down a list and the person answers, especially if maybe the PR is a male and the person that answers is a female or vice versa, that person answers, and one of my disarming ways of going about it is just, this doesn't sound like Tom. And you get a little chuckle and break the ice and then can go in. You could really use that same approach on voicemail, especially if it's a generic voicemail, and just pretend like you think that you're really calling Tom.
Does that help? You got two options.
Yeah, it helps.
Okay, thank you. All right, we got three more in the queue. Next up is phone number ending in 4674. Are you there?
I am. I've got a couple of short questions. I've been really excited to get on the call the past couple of weeks. I've missed them. I have a question about my existing arrangement. When I initially did probate mastery, my main goal was investing, real estate investing, and actually making purchases myself. And my fiance, she works at a law firm right now, and she had an interest in real estate. So we basically made the arrangement. She's almost about to get her real estate license, and we'll be working in a team. And I don't know if you've seen that before. I don't know if it limits liability in some sense. I don't know if you'd have any recommendations on that arrangement. And so my main question is, you know, can I bring a pre-signed listing agreement to the meetings that I go into? And if they sign, it's legally binding between them and my fiance, wherever she decides to work, whoever she decides to work with, whatever brokerage. And then if you have any other tips for that arrangement to make that work. And then I have a follow-up unrelated question after this.
So I think as far as the pre-signed listing agreement, I think her broker would agree that's sub-agency. And with you not having a license, that's not... it's not legal, and it creates a lot of liability for you. You could take her on the appointment with you, and there would be no problem. As far as having investor and brokerage activity under the same brand or the same roof, like as long as you're an ethical person and you're properly disclosing, there's no liability. There's only upside. You're retaining all the commissions that you're currently paying. I would recommend that your investment activity is contained in one entity with its own banking and EIN and credit card, and your brokerage activity is in a completely separate entity. So in the event that someone ever would point a finger at you, you have a firewall, because courts oftentimes side with the consumer, even if you didn't do anything wrong. So still have that liability firewall of having the entities and the activities separated. I would recommend that you guys reach out as a brand, like, you know, the Pittsburgh Probate Team or the Pittsburgh Life Transitions or whatever that might be. And then in there, in the bottom of the letter, you can disclose her license status just on a, you know, I use like a number 8 light gray font that has my brokerage name, address, phone number. And then I add in asterisk, ethics are of utmost importance to us. If you're currently in an agency relationship with a licensed salesperson, please disregard this letter. And that's been enough to protect me. I've done, you know, brokerage and investment activity ever since I moved here and started in residential real estate, and I've never had a problem.
Is there any way to make that work without me? Because, you know, I wish I had this well in advance. That's not the answer I was looking or hoping for. But is there any way to make that work? I know she's working basically full-time right now. And so I was hoping she could just show up to the closings and I'd be able to do all the other activities. But is there...
You can sit down and talk to her broker and see what they're comfortable with. But brokers tend to be pretty conservative. I don't think any would... I mean, what you can do is you can, rather than taking a pre-signed listing agreement, you can, you know, have the conversation, build rapport, get, you know, and say, okay, well, listen, it sounds to me like the best way to serve you guys is going to be through our brokerage division. I want you to check your email within the next hour. You'll see a listing agreement through DocuSign. And you could do that and then just text your wife and be like, hey, fire a DocuSign listing agreement to this couple at this, you know, this email address. You could handle it that way. You can handle it virtually, but she needs to be the one having the pricing conversation, you know, any agency activity. You don't want to be talking about it, because if that person, you know, decides that they want to back out of a deal and they point a finger and be like, well, this guy told me he was going to list it and he's not even licensed, then you've got to answer to the state, and there are financial and criminal penalties. So
would be able to handle some of the other tasks, like taking, you know, or at least just managing the other tasks as a, if I could, I get hired as an assistant, quote unquote, for her, you know, from her brokerage, and then be able to manage the photo process any of the other tasks? Because I don't want her to feel like, you know, obligated to this venture.
Yeah, you can certainly do that. Like, she just, as far as the agency relationship conversations, price or strategy, she needs to be the one having those conversations, not you. Once the listing agreement's signed, you can be her, you know, assistant, or you can do whatever, anything like that you want. You can help get the homes cleaned out, get them staged, get photography done. You have no worry there. It's just anything that has to do with a contract or a price discussion, you want to avoid.
Okay, that makes sense. My next quick question, I was wondering, I've got my toe in a bunch of different things and I've set up, I like to call them traps, because I've got skills I can help people. I've got virtual teams to subcontract, like web development. But my question is, can this be successfully executed spending 25 hours a week on, as long as the time's spent effectively?
Sure, it can. So the beautiful thing about a lot of these, do you know how many leads are in your market?
Yeah, I've got in the two counties that I'll be working at, 225 a month.
So you're going to, like, when you're prospecting, you'll hold a call pace of about 12 per hour. And if you have 12 hours a week to prospect and 12 hours a week to handle appointments and admin, absolutely, you can do this. That's more, quite frankly, that's more than most people put in. So you can easily do it. And what we teach is, you know, you want to appear as a vertically integrated solution, but not be doing all the work. We teach you to build your vendor team so you get the social credit for bringing a one-stop solution, but you don't actually do the execution. Home stager does his part. The estate sale company does their part. The social worker does their part. So you're the quarterback. Like, you're coordinating this. You're not doing this. But you get the credit for it. And from a marketing standpoint, we want it to appear like this giant business under one roof. But from a business standpoint, we want you to work smart, not hard. So with 25 hours, you can absolutely make this a pillar in your business.
Okay, that's really helpful to know. Do you mind if I share in 1 minute just some recent success I've had helping people, just for the group to hear?
No, it'd be great. What's your first name again, sir?
It's Isaiah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yesterday, actually, I'd set up an appointment with this attorney I was working with. I took him out to lunch and was like, hey, would this be, you know, do you see this being able to help families? I told him I was really excited. I was like, do you see this, you know, as a solution to help some of the families you've worked with in unison with your team handled? And, you know, he was loving it and all that. And so I've been able to refer a couple of people over to him. And then recently, just 2 days ago, he had the first really meaningful, really successful, it was really hard for the family conversation. And I got him on the phone and I told him I couldn't really help them with the property and that type of stuff just because of the nature of the property and the situation they were in. But I said, the only thing I really think that should be your priority is talking to this legal professional to talk about a living trust. And this is why. And so she finally came around to it and they had a really successful call and they have a follow-up call booked. So that's just, you know, the attorney reached out, said, thank you so much for sending them my way. Da, 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 da. So we're going to have some lunch and I'm going to do some co-marketing with him. So I just thought that was great.
That's awesome,
big momentum builder. But what I was going to say, how I got this, and this might be helpful, unless you would recommend otherwise, but I found Google My Business to just be an amazing local tool. And I have set up, it's actually just a separate entity, a separate LLC, but it's called Jacksonville Buyers, which is the market I'm in. And I set it up as a fictitious name to be Jacksonville Buyers Estate Cleanouts, Liquidations, and, you know, whatever. I don't know, whatever the other keyword is. And the reason I know keyword stuffing, you can't keyword stuff, and I know you know what that is, but you can't name your Google My Business something that it's not legally named, which is why I make the fictitious name include the keywords and the location. And I've gotten probably 10 or 15 inbound calls so far in the last few weeks, and I'd say about half the time there are these people. You can help them just by giving them some tips on where to go if you can't directly help them sell the property or connect them with one of your other partners. But a lot of the times, like I have a meeting on Friday, it's a woman who's downsizing and she owns the real estate and she's, you know, so we're going to discuss that. I'm going to make an offer for everything. But half the time there's like it's either an end of life downsizing transition or a probate type situation. And so I just found it really, it's just like you come right up to the top if you use those keywords in your market. And so anyways, I just wanted to share that as a little bit of a tactic to get inbound stuff. I know outbound is the way to go, but to set a little trap or a feeder out there, you know, I found it to be really effective. So
that's a great tip. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate
it.
Hey, Chad, the queue is overfilled. Can we go a little bit over, or do we have a hard cutoff at 2 today?
No, I'm good till 2:15.
Okay. We'll get as many of you in as we can. I don't think we'll get you all. If we don't get to you, right after the call, feel free to reach out to us directly. Next up is phone number ending in 1717. You're up next.
Hi. My question is, I didn't get the certificate yet from the class, but can you tell me what it says on the certificate? Like, do we have a title or what we are that we're now that we took the mastery class? Because I want to know how I can represent myself.
I think it's Master of the Universe.
Expert.
Yeah, Master of the Universe, Chad? Is that? Just kidding. Go ahead, Chad. I'll let you give a serious answer.
Did you just tell a He-Man joke?
I think I did. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
It is Certified Probate Expert, or CPE.
Okay. So now when I'm talking to an attorney, I feel uncomfortable saying that because really they're the probate expert, not me.
That's okay. Hi, my name's Chad. I have a team of people that help families going through probate, and I'm looking for, a good attorney to fit on the team. Have I called the right place?
Okay.
Pretty simple, right?
Yeah, because obviously they always will know more about probate than me.
Attorneys can't call themselves an expert in probate if they haven't taken a class. There are many estate attorneys and probate attorneys who can't call themselves probate expert until they've taken a class that's about as hard as the bar. And they don't need you to give a title. They need you to tell them what you do and how you do it. So when you're calling, with your certification carries more weight with the family than with the attorney.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine saying that I'm a probate expert to the families. It was just when I was also soliciting the attorneys.
And to Chad's point, I agree with that. You don't need to tell them that you're an expert. You need to tell them that you work with and help families going through the probate process, and then simply follow it up with, do you have a quick second for me to tell you how I do that?
All right.
Attorneys don't tend to have small egos. Let them be the expert. You just be somebody out there trying to help the executors. All right. Next up is phone number ending in 7428. You're up next.
Oh, hey, guys. This is Dave out here in Colorado, and heard Jim's contribution earlier. Would love to connect with him, help out either as a buyer or connecting with a good, solid real estate agent here in the area. And had a quick question. Bruce reminded me of something I think Chad had said. Someone answers the phone, and you ask if it's the person you're looking to contact, and they're evasive and just say, well, who's this? And to not assume that it's them or not them. What's that next kind of follow-up suggestion there?
It's really depends on the reaction, Dave. I mean, like if it typically, I'm trying to reach Dave. This is Sam. Who is this? It's something like, oh, well, Sam, listen, I'm glad I caught you. My name's Chad. I've got a team of folks here that help families going through probate. And I noticed that Dave was the personal representative of an estate. Is there a number you can give me that I could reach him at? We can role play it if you'd like. I know Bruce will have some input here. And if you want to jump on his calendar to specifically role play that, you can. If you get a hold of the wrong person, the objective is to try to get the right person on the phone. So I'm asking for their cell phone number or their email address. And I'll briefly explain why I'm reaching out.
Sure.
Does that help?
Yeah. That's great.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir. Next up is phone number ending in 5681. You're up next.
Hi, yes. This is Derek. I had a question. I have a home that I have been driving by quite a bit. Grass has grown up quite high over quite a few months now. I actually have been trying to research and trying to find it. Found out that the guy died a few years ago, yet I still have not been able to get in contact with anyone. I used 2 skip traces to try to find family. Found out he was an orphan. So I've been trying to do research on how to actually inquire on who has the property now and how to acquire the property now. Just wanted to know if y'all had any tips or what do y'all think on how to go about still finding someone that knows more about the property. It's just sitting there.
Have the taxes been paid?
It has, and the mortgage is still good on it. It's still
okay.
Getting paid.
So there's either a mail forward or somebody's checking the mailbox.
Okay.
So direct mail is your best chance here, because if they're paying the taxes and they're paying the mortgage, someone's getting the tax bill. Well, it might be escrowed. When was the mortgage originated? Do you know?
Not right off the bat.
The taxes might be paid out of escrow. so it's being paid as their mortgage payment. But chances are, if someone's paying a mortgage, they probably have a mail forward or they're picking the mail up. So direct mail is probably your best shot since skip tracing is not working for you.
Okay. Okay. I try to.
Hey, Barrett, did you say that the heir is an orphan and that they're underage? Is that what you said?
No, he was overage, but I was just researching, okay, trying to find, you know, family members, someone that I may be able to get in contact with, and found out that he was an orphan. So I did find foster parents, too, but I haven't been able to get in contact with them.
The other thing you can do that's been effective for me, because nosy neighbors will help you here, put your letter in a manila envelope, throw a couple lifesavers in it, because they're light, but they give it some bulk, and use 4 pieces of tape and firmly tape it, ideally inside of a storm door where it won't, you know, it won't get wet or blow away. But tape a manila envelope where it's visible from the street, and that gets attention. The lawn, whoever's there mowing, well, you said nobody's mowing the lawn, but the neighbors probably know. You can door knock the neighbors. You can tape a manila envelope on this that's, you know, visible from the street. And all you need is someone to talk to you about it and connect you with the right person. So even if it's a neighbor that calls you, typically neighbors know the story. So you might start with door knocking the neighbors and take your letter in a manila envelope on that trip. And if nobody knows anything, tape it to the window and wait for the call.
Okay. We'll do. We'll do. All right.
Phone number ending in 8213. You're up next.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Well, I think it's morning for you guys. I'm not sure. But good morning or good afternoon. So I wanted to thank you guys, actually, for I think it was last week or the week before you guys brought up, I think it was Bruce, the 90-91 rule about dedicating the first 90 minutes of every day for 90 days to the one most important thing, which is lead generation, or in our case, reaching out to people that need our help. I noticed that I think that was the missing link in my days. Essentially, I felt extremely lost every day. And I noticed that it's because I didn't have or was not yet respecting my daily schedule. And by creating or starting to create a habit of doing it at the same time as, I think, Chad, you mentioned you prospect, I believe, 8 to 10 and 4 to 6, and then you do admin work in between. So I wanted to thank you guys for that. It's really helping a lot. Now, my question is, I feel like since I signed up, I have not performed the way I should, and that's on me because I wasn't doing it properly. I do want to make sure that, you know, I start being proactive about it. So what are your thoughts on perhaps using Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for probate leads, and then Monday, Fridays for attorneys? Because I remember there was even something in Probate Master, I believe, that said that the best days to call were Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to make sure that I use my time effectively, especially since I also do expired calls a lot. I usually do expireds in the morning, 8 to 10, and I usually do probate leads 4 to 6. Reason for that is because the expireds tend to be a little more aggressive, so I try to do those when I have a little more energy in the morning. But I'm open to suggestions and truly appreciate you guys.
I would recommend that you set your attorney block from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 1 to 4.
One to four. Okay.
Midweek, midday is the best time to catch an attorney. There's no guarantee. They're very busy and out of court at all different times. But typically, if you can catch them right after lunch, they're far less likely to be in court. So I still like the midweek, midday, because a good attorney is taking some Mondays and Fridays off. They're living their life. So if they're running their business at a high, you know, if they're successful, they're probably taking long weekends, and you're more likely to catch them midweek, midday than ever. So you could do your 8 to 10 block and then do admin work until 1, and then 1 to 4 is your attorney block, and then you go back into prospecting 4 to 6.
Okay.
And Mondays and Fridays, like for me, This changed my business. I only went on appointments on Fridays and Mondays, and that made those Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday become sacred office days.
Okay.
So it also creates a lot of urgency, and I didn't expect this. I expected to lose credibility, but I gained credibility by my time being more scarce.
Mm-hmm.
So driving the appointments only into Fridays or Mondays had a really, really great unexpected result for me. But the biggest thing was what happened in the office. Like, it seemed like less fires started and had to be put out. It was all blocked out. I knew when I was doing my admin work, I wasn't letting my business control me. I was controlling the business. So
okay.
you
could appreciate that.
Try that and, you know, free up your Mondays and Fridays. It's hard to get people on the phones on those days anyways, and make
okay.
those appointment days.
And keep
okay,
up the good
perfect.
Work.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Well,
appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
That.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We started the call with Jim Forsythe, and we're ending the call with Jim Forsythe. This is our Forsythe sandwich. That's hard to say. You're last, Jim. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I heard that Dave was in Colorado. And I'm sure you will be sending it to me, but send me his contact info, and as soon as we make that PR, if we
I will. You got it, sir.
Give him a call.
I already wrote that down. Immediately after the call, I'll reach out to you.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Jim.
All right. Hey, guys, I think it's one of our better calls. I really do. A lot of variety, a huge amount of participation. I want to end this like I always do. I want to thank each and every 150 of you for being here. I want to thank the 12 or 13 that actively participated, and I want to challenge each of you. Take one of the great ideas that you heard on today's call, go out and put it into practice, and please come back next Thursday and share your results with the group. Make it a great week. Stay productive, stay healthy, and we will talk to you same time next Thursday. Take care, everybody.